And I said I was going to make you happy on Sunday night. I'm going to read a ghost story to you. The more I think about it, the more I think I shouldn't do it. It's going to make you feel miserable. Now, one of the explanations in the strange occurrences has to do with supernatural forces. It's just as closed mind to rule it out as it is to go overboard on it. Now, I don't believe every time you have a cough, it's a demon. I don't believe every time you have the flu, it's a demon. I don't believe a boil is necessarily a demon. I don't think you can spit them out on napkins. I don't think the devil is wasting that much time talking backwards on rock records. You heard anybody play them backwards recently? He wants to be heard. You don't need to get backwards in the record. Demonology has been exploited. They made a movie, The Exorcist. And old brother God, George Burns, had a legitimate gripe when he said, all they got to do is have a little girl vomit all over her bed and everybody believes in the devil. Why don't you believe in me? Remember when George Burns had that marvelous little speech? I've been to spirit services in the jungles of Brazil. I've watched witch doctors in northern Luzon do their number. I've never seen devil worship to match Haiti in and around the Bermuda Triangle. Too hot in here now. There must be a middle point. So, lest somebody think that I'm going to be normal on this subject, I thought I'd start with a Catholic demonologist. The extraordinary career of Ed and Lorraine Warren, the Gerald Brittle. They're not unknown. I'll tell you something. None other than the U.S. Army, at West Point no less, had a problem and called them in. I mean, they had a real problem. They had guests at the commandant's house, and they'd get their pockets picked. Billfolds and jewelry would be taken off of. Things would be taken, and they'd discover them later all neatly arranged on a dresser upstairs. I mean, everybody was being suspected. See if I can find this. Well, I know what you want. Now, Ed and Lorraine Warren were called in as the consultants in the Amityville horror case. Now, some people call that a hoax. Well, like some of the happenings in and around the Bermuda Triangle. Too much is there to ignore it and write it off as a hoax. Like the New Testament, you know, if that's fake, you can just about worship the people that perpetuated the fake. Now, hold on a minute, folks. I got a story here about West Point. And I know you don't want me to rush into that swirl that came charging into Ed's house, do you? Where is this West Point story? I thought I could find that right off, or I wouldn't have kept you waiting. And you've heard of the ghost of Flight 401. Anybody heard that? Yeah, I got one back there. The L1 or L1011, the Eastern Airlines that crashed in the Everglades, there's a whole book about it. The Ghost of Flight 401. Oh, here it is. Yeah. It was October 1972. We'll get back to it. Well, now, let's go back. Beyond Amityville, it said, it's called. Now, Ed Warren was called in on the Amityville horror case. That he had an experience just a little earlier that prepared him for it, among many experiences he's had. He's a Catholic. Now, some of you have been over this before. Will you be patient with me? You can stay there. You don't have to take notes on this. Ed Warren's office is located in a small cottage-sized building attached to the main house by a long enclosed passageway. I want you to get that picture. Ed Warren's office is located in a small cottage-sized building attached to the main house by a long enclosed passageway. You say, do you believe in demons? You say, I didn't say that at all. Well, somebody might have. What did Jesus cast out of that demoniac boy that went into the pigs and the pigs couldn't handle it? They talked back to him and said, our name's Legion. Or my name is Legion, because we be many. What was it in the Old Testament when Saul went to the witch at Endor and she called up what the good old King James says is Samuel's spirit? Now, was that some supernatural imitator? Or did Samuel's spirit actually come up? It's in the Bible, isn't it? I haven't heard a television evangelist this year preach on the witch at Endor calling up Samuel's spirit and explaining to me what happened. I mean, here is a subject. The Catholic Church has got full policies on exorcism. This is not something new. Now, in the news of late, there have been, like many other religious areas that's taken over by the nuts, extreme happenings in that area. It's about time somebody talk intelligently on the subject and research it out. You know there are thousands of Christians who live and die with no comprehension of who the enemy is. That's why I get mad at these evangelists on Sunday. They think we're the enemy. They're running around just firing at random. Shoot for Jesus, hit men. The devil and his angels are the enemy. Well, Paul said we wrestle not against flesh and blood. My Lord, I need all the sinners to help me that will. I mean, you know, the saints, most of them, they wouldn't dirty their hands fighting the devil. They wouldn't be... No way they'd contaminate themselves by telling the devil to go to hell. They got their hands full dumping on sinners and criticizing saints. Now, Ed Warren's office is located in a small cottage-sized building. Won't you get this? Attached to the main house by a long enclosed passageway. And we've been here before. As Ed sat working on preliminary details of the Amityville case, that fateful February morning, the latch at the end of the passageway snapped open, followed by the percussive boom of the heavy wooden door. Footsteps then started toward the office. Ed leaned back in his chair, waiting for Lorraine to enter with a much-needed cup of coffee. "In here!" Ed Warren called out. Long minutes passed, however, and she didn't appear. "Lorraine!" Ed called out again, but there was no reply. "You've heard this before. You're bored." What he heard instead, building in the distance, was an eerie, howling wind. It was not the whistling of wind under the eaves, but rather the menacing roar of a distant cyclone. Goose flesh rose on his arms. "Lorraine," he asked forcefully, "are you there?" Still there was no response. As the ominous, swirling sound built in power and intensity, Ed quickly thought back over the last few minutes. I'm reading from The Demonologist by Gerald Riddle. As the ominous, swirling sound built in power and intensity, Ed quickly thought back over the last few minutes. It then occurred to him that he had heard only three. You know, the hardest thing I have dealing with my staff people and new people around me that come into this work is that if you are striking blows against Satan's territory, you're going to fight, you're going to find the devil's fighting you. And he's very real. But let's go on. It then occurred to Ed that he had heard only three footsteps in the passageway. A favorite number of Satan's forces. The striking time so often is 3 a.m. because it's the antipode on the day, if you will, the opposite point in the darkness to the hour that Jesus grabbed the keys of death, hell, and the grave. The crucifixion hour. This is the opposite in the night. Again and again, when you come to understand the workings of demons, threes, particularly in combinations of two making six, but distinctly three and three. He loves to imitate. It occurred, and Ed knew this. I'll tell you that. Ed quickly thought back over the last few minutes. It then occurred to him he'd heard only three footsteps in the passageway, not the continuous tread of a person walking. Now, you understand, you're not listening to a nut. I got new people who are listening. I've stayed off this subject because this is probably one of the few times that I want to hang right out front. I did a PhD at Stanford University in philosophies of education. I was a thoroughgoing agnostic. Came back to my faith from a hard-headed study of the resurrection. Hate sensationalism with a passion, because the realities of God's power and the realities of demon forces are sufficient. You don't have to manufacture little two-bit booms. I don't want you to think, if you're listening the first time, you're listening to somebody who engages in sensationalism. This is in the context, if you're listening for the first time, of a wider study on the pyramid, on Atlantis, on the Bermuda Triangle. Who were those sons of God who came down and cohabitated with the women on the earth and produced giants? Evil creatures that God had to destroy, among others, in the flood. A hybrid. A combination, if you will. An attempt to create an incarnation that's a caricature. Sons of the daughters of men and sons of these fallen angels, if they weren't fallen earlier, they now were fallen. Aberrations. Unlike the pre-existing demons, angels, sons of God, whatever you want to call them, they produced a hybrid. Earthly, fleshly, and dying, linked with pre-existing, eternal, supernatural, quote, sons of God. You say, you believe that? I'm just reporting what's in the Bible. Whether I believe it or not at this point is irrelevant. Even your Artanach series, the scholarly Jewish series of commentaries, the one on Genesis, offers three explanations. Sons of Seth mated with the daughters, or rather sons of Cain. No, sons of Seth mated with the daughters of Cain. That's one option. That didn't necessarily produce giants. They both had the genes of Adam and Eve in them. Second alternative, the rulers mated with the common people. Just as foolish. Then, rather apologetically, they say, and quote the Jewish scholars who offer it, or angels, or supernatural denizens of heaven, cohabitating with the daughters of men and producing aberrations. But when the flood covered them up, where did these hybrid spirits, now absent a body, go? And when Satan was cast out of heaven, some of them were obviously locked in a pit. They'll be turned loose in the tribulation under the leader called Abaddon in the book of Revelation. Locust demons coming out of the smoke of the abyss to bring hurt on the earth. See, that's just figures. That's baloney. The first principle of biblical interpretation is believe it means what it says. 200 million demons described chained in the Euphrates area, turned loose during the tribulation. Some of the demons that confronted Jesus said to him, "Have you come that you might send us to the abyss before our time?" When he cast him out of the demoniac boy, he said, or they said, "Don't make us go to the abyss or to the deep. Let us, we pray, enter into these pigs." If I could get every person on my staff and every person around me to understand the warfare in its real nature, and that only keeping your spiritual guard up will protect you. That's why I tell people out here that have the Epi-Pen 24 hours a day, leave it on your house all night. You say he doesn't like my preaching. Now, do these things exist or not? That's the question. Are there supernatural beings to be entered into the equation of strange experiences? As the ominous swirling built in power and intensity, Ed quickly thought back over the last few minutes. It then occurred to him that he had heard only three footsteps in the passageway, not the continuous tread of a person walking. Something was wrong. Suddenly, the desk lamp dimmed to the strength of a candle flame. Then, abruptly, the temperature in the office plunged to that of a walk-in freezer. A rank, pungent smell of sulfur rose in the room. Suspicious of the unnatural clamor, Ed Warren opened a desk drawer and withdrew a vial of holy water and a large wooden crucifix. And as I've already said, I'd pick up a Mormon Bible if it's on my desk. In fact, I think get into this scene. Suspicious of the unnatural clamor, Ed Warren opened a desk drawer and withdrew a vial of holy water and a large wooden crucifix. I started with the Catholic. He then got up and walked a few steps out of his office into the anteroom. As he did, there swirled out of the passageway a horrendous conical whirlwind. You slip out of your machinery there, Mike, because I'll call you if I need you for music and monitor that air conditioning. There's a point halfway between. It's too cold now. Pointed at the bottom, broad at the top, the thing was blacker than the natural blackness of the night. Now, do you remember that black mass that the Yamacraw encountered? Far larger than a man, the swirling black mass moved into the dimly lit room and drifted slowly to Ed's left side and came to a halt some 10 feet away. Do you have the capacity at this late hour on Sunday night to put yourself in Ed's place? Came to a halt some 10 feet away. As Ed watched, it appeared to grow even denser and blacker than it was before. Indeed, within the swirl, he could see that something was beginning to take shape. An entity was beginning to manifest in physical form. As a demonologist, Ed Warren knew he had to act quickly. You don't believe any of that? Well, I don't care. It's like the Bermuda Triangle stories. The ones you don't want to believe, kick them out. There's still a whole bunch left. This ain't no fibonite guy. You'll see that in a moment. As a demonologist, Ed Warren knew he had to act quickly. I'll tell you, he's under attack because he's been engaged to explain the Amityville horror. As a demonologist, Ed Warren knew he had to act quickly to take the initiative before this fearsome black mass transformed itself into something even more forbidding and dangerous. Holding the cross toward what was now rapidly changing into a macabre hooded specter, Ed Warren stepped forward. Give him an A for guts. The moment he did, however, the entity moved defiantly toward him. Now, what would you do? Run like hell. That'll get you. Ed stopped and stood his ground as the form slowly drifted forward. When the swirling black mass was no more than a few feet away, Ed methodically and with absolute determination showered the thing in the sign of the cross with the contents of the holy water vial. Now you say, you believe in that crucifix and that vial? I believe I would have picked up any weapon I could lay my hands on. I'd have used Jerusalem rocks and water from Jordan. Now, you may say, well, now that's the best argument for having some of that stuff. Well, if you want it that bad enough, ask for it, and I'll get you some a lot cheaper than you're having to pay the other evangelists. But I really believe that it was the cannon he's about to fire that did the job. So you can have faith in a lot of things, and they become foci to focus your faith. But they do not become a substitute for the real cannon. Here's the cannon. Then he spoke the ancient command, "In the name of Jesus Christ, I command you to leave." For eternal seconds, the black mass stayed motionless, no more than a foot away from the cross. Then slowly it began to back off, though not before giving Ed a clear vision of himself and Lorraine involved in a potentially deadly automobile accident along a highway. That bad news was left. An accident that's going to happen. With that, the entity withdrew into the passageway from whence it came. An enormous sense of relief came over Ed Warren as he stood sweating profusely in the freezing cold room. Yet, as he attempted to collect his thoughts, the vicious snarl of fighting animals suddenly erupted outside the house. Immediately, Ed realized there were no animals fighting. That visitation was still in progress. The entity had simply moved upstairs to attack Lorraine. Avoiding the passageway, Ed flung open the side door to the office and ran up the back steps of the house. He would be too late. Upstairs. We leaving somebody right now? Who in the world are we leaving now? I just saw an address go up. We're not leaving anybody now, are we? Avoiding the passageway, Ed flung open the side door to the office and ran up the back steps. You over there at King's House 1, answer the phone. Give some comfort to these people when they call. Avoiding the passageway, Ed flung open the side door to the office and ran up the back steps of the house. He would be too late. Upstairs. Now, it was October. Let's leave that one there just a minute. Let's just leave it there a minute or two. A minute or a few. Am I boring you? It was October. I want to give these people some credentials. It was October 1972. By the way, they got involved in the Amityville horror case because a news station called them, asked them, because of their reputation. Here's another evidence that I'm not reading some paperback book. Now, I've said for years I've had great respect for the work that Lester Sumrall did in the Philippine Islands. I preached in Manila many times. I still remember you could get in a taxi in Manila, anywhere in Manila, in 1963 and say, take me to the Christ is the Answer Church. And every taxi driver knew where it was. Because of an experience that happened involving demons and a little girl in that terrible prison in Manila. See, I'm an academician. Academicians are trained to be skeptical. I learned how to question everything before I ever found the ability to and the guts to somewhere shoot the questioning engineer and start producing a life. I'm not your easy to believe kind of guy. I like to surround myself with people that are positive because I don't need any help in poking holes in things. I don't need anybody to release the chemistry of questions and negative things. I'm better at that than anybody. At least there ain't nobody better. But I believe in demons. And I believe in them beyond words. But lots of people give lip service to it. They don't know what's happening, when it's happening. They don't understand what the symptoms are to look for when satanic forces begin to invade a territory. And they don't know what it is that opens the door, and they don't know what it is that cultivates it, and they don't know what it is that makes it possible for it to move from invasion to oppression to possession. And I repeat, I'm tired of the nuts camping out on this territory. It's like a lot of other subjects. It's long overdue for the intelligent part of the church to pay some attention to. Even if you discard it, don't do it out of ignorance. The resurrection was denied for years because people said it couldn't happen. Therefore, anybody that says it did must be lying. Because the resurrection can't happen. So anyone that says it did is a poor reporter, not a good historian. So if there's a record of the resurrection, you discard that already because it's out of hand. Since the resurrection can't occur, anybody who says it did must be lying. I'm the guy that challenges everything. Man, was I a pain growing up in the church. I ask questions about everything. You can tell that. That's why I can't get through any place in the Bible without getting hung up on the little side issues. But I'll give these people some credibility. You were waiting for that, weren't you? I got to mark where I left them. Yeah, okay. It was October 1972. The executive officer at the United States Military Academy telephoned the Warrens a day before they were scheduled to present a general lecture to the cadets there. Though the officer's comments were deliberately vague, he nonetheless told the Warrens that a curious security problem had arisen, and he wanted to know if they'd be willing to help in a professional capacity before they lectured the next day at the point. Without probing, the Warrens agreed to lend assistance. Good, the relieved officer said. I'll send a car for you tomorrow at 3 p.m. I wonder if the Pentagon knows about this. Be interesting. Or the chiefs of staff. The following afternoon, a shiny black limousine bearing government plates pulled up outside the Warrens' front door. Ed and Lorraine, dressed in evening clothes for the lecture they were going to give to the cadets on this subject, slid into the roomy back seat. The chauffeur, an Army staff sergeant, told them the drive would take about 1 hour, but volunteered no other information. This is West Point, my friends. Moving north along the Taconic Parkway through occasional snow showers, the limousine nevertheless kept up a steady pace of 60 miles an hour. A little past 4 p.m., they entered the gates of the United States Military Academy. The sergeant pulled the car up to the entrance of the headquarters office, swung open the rear door, and escorted the Warrens to the executive officer of West Point. Major Donald Bowling, an orderly, good-natured man, offered Ed and Lorraine a seat in his office. He then briefed them on an already prepared schedule, dinner with the officers of the faculty at 6, followed by a general lecture to all classes at 8. One more thing. For the next few minutes, Major Bowling went on to explain how an unaccountable breach of security was occurring in the home of West Point's superintendent, the commanding general, in 1972. Naturally, the military police had already been over the problem. But to no avail, he conceded. Matters had only gotten worse. Therefore, it had been decided to get an outside opinion on a problem that appeared to have no natural explanation. So if there's no objection, the superintendent, he said, would like to speak with you before dinner. We'll be glad to help, Ed replied. Do you know the nature of the problem? Between us, the major almost broke into a grin, there's a ghost in the general's quarters. Switching off the lights, the executive officer took his cap, escorted the Warrens out of the office door, and introduced them to an Army photographer who sat waiting in the hallway. Strict limits had been placed on the collection of information that day. All documentary records would be the property of the U.S. government. Outside, the call of cadences broke the silence as cadets marched through the gray stillness of the afternoon. The group took a leisurely stroll to the superintendent's quarters, known officially as the Sylvanus Thayer Mansion, an impressive brick structure built in the federal style. A general staff aide answered the front door to the mansion, showed the group inside. Within moments, the commanding general and his wife entered the foyer, and the executive officer introduced them to Warrens. The general's wife directed everyone to a sitting room. It was beautifully furnished with period antiques by previous generals over the course of 2 centuries. Nothing macabre has happened here, the general said, sitting in what appeared to be his favorite chair. Nevertheless, a number of incidents have gone on in this house that so far no one has been able to explain to my satisfaction. Some background. In the basement, there is a private study. That room is kept locked and secure. But no matter how many times the bunk in there is made up, it's always found ripped apart. Shades of that crypt in the Bermuda Triangle. No matter how many times, that room is kept locked and secure. But no matter how many times the bunk in there is made up, it's always found ripped apart later. Ah, foot. Now, Dallas wasn't with us when we went through that crypt with the dancing caskets. No matter how many times the bunk in there is made up, it's always found ripped apart later. Upstairs, ghosts have been seen flitting about the house. These I haven't seen, the general said, but they've been reported for years, and apparently they go with the billet. Now, I wouldn't mention anything of this except that we have an unusual, persistent problem. Personal belongings and other important articles are regularly found missing. Not stolen, he emphasized, but missing temporarily. I warn you. The general stopped for a moment to put on his glasses. I grant you, he says, none of this is terribly important unless you put it into perspective. One of the responsibilities of the commanding officer here is social protocol. In this house, we receive our fair share of government leaders and army brass. Recently, on special occasions, some potentially serious events have occurred. Wallets have been stolen. Pockets have been picked. Money and personal mementos have been taken from eminent dignitaries and their wives. Later, all the stolen items are found upstairs, neatly laid out on the dresser in our master bedroom. The Warrens sat mum, taking in the unique nature of the problem. This foolishness cannot continue, the general said forcefully. Yet we know that no person has committed these actions. So my question to you, Mr. Warren or Mrs. Warren, is the following. If this is a ghost, and I stress if it is, then you tell me, can a ghost manipulate physical objects? Ed answered. Now, I want you to understand. I want you to understand that that's West Point calling this. You can read so many paperback fruity things of people getting half-baked messages from outer space until you can turn off on all of it. I'm just saying, like I said about the pyramid, there's too much in that passageway to rule it out. It hit too many dates to not be concerned about what it says about the dates yet to come. Well, I think I got you concerned about the dates yet to come in the pyramid. If I don't, I don't need to ever go back to it. There's simply too much evidence for Atlantis to just write it off. There's too much evidence of strange goings on in the Bermuda Triangle and around the 35th parallel of the Azores to write it off. And I believe there is a gestalt that ties it all together. I think part of the problem is looking at them in isolation. And demonology. It's like parapsychology. Parapsychology for years was ridiculed by science. Cornell University and others began to study it. And to those that took the time to pay attention to extrasensory perception, or parapsychology as they call it, it finally settled in. There's too much evidence to say it doesn't happen. The question is no longer, does it happen? But how and what manner? Now, demons. Avoiding the passageway. Let's go back to Ed. I only took him to West Point to give him some credibility beyond the Ghostbuster of the Yucatan. Avoiding the passageway, Ed flung open the side door of the office and ran up the back steps of the house. He would be too late. Upstairs. Are you interested in this at all? I mean, I don't want to ruin your whole Sunday night. The entity had simply moved upstairs to attack Lorraine. Avoiding the passageway, Ed flung open the side door to the office and ran up the back steps of the house. He would be too late. Upstairs. Upstairs, Lorraine Warren sat in bed reading the biography of Padre Pio, a remarkable monk who many believe is destined for sainthood. No matter how exhausted, Lorraine nevertheless will not sleep when Ed must work alone late at night in the office. After a lifetime of work in the supernatural, both Ed and Lorraine Warren know they're never alone, ever. I wish I could get you all to realize that. Ed and Lorraine Warren know they are never alone, ever. As Lorraine sat quietly reading, a dreadful pall swept over the room. Then, setting the book down, she too realized that something was wrong. Very wrong. I was terror-stricken, Lorraine says. But I didn't know what I was afraid of. I looked around the room, but nothing was there. I then looked down at our two dogs asleep beside the bed. They were absolutely motionless, except the hair on each dog from head to tail was standing straight up in the air. Let's try that again. I was terror-stricken, Lorraine says, but I didn't know what I was afraid of. I looked around the room. There was nothing there. I then looked down at our two dogs, asleep beside the bed. They were absolutely motionless, except the hair on each dog from head to tail was standing straight up in the air. What occurred in the home of Ted and Ellen Donovan between March 3rd and May 2nd, 1974, is classified as a true diabolical attack. Let's get three of them going. The terrible assault that lasted for 60 consecutive days. I tried to tell you, you need a dish. You need me in there 24 hours a day. Anyway, what occurred in the home of Ted and Ellen Donovan between March 3rd and May 2nd, 1974, is classified as a true diabolical attack. The terrible assault that lasted for 60 consecutive days came to an abrupt halt with the exorcism conducted in the house on May 2nd, 1974. He said, what's an exorcism? It's what Jesus did when he drove the demons out of that demoniac boy by the Lake of Galilee in the territory of the Gadarenes. The case and all its particulars are now a matter of record. In his own files, Ed Warren retains a statement written by Ted Donovan's brother, who himself was an involuntary witness to the phenomena in the home. I, he says, nor anyone else in my family, have ever before witnessed or actually experienced anything so weird and terrifying. I am sure the impact of that obscure experience shall remain with my frightened children and wife indefinitely. The incomprehensible predicament that we have witnessed leaves our frightened family group in complete bewilderment. At least for the present time, it defies all rational and logical explanations. All the tangible evidence and facts related to the preternatural mysteriousness of those events witnessed by our family group should be laid bare and then rationally reviewed by competent people who are experienced in these weird and perplexing matters. When and if a review is completed, I firmly believe that the ultimate conclusions will eventually suggest that unearthly powers or influences were at work. Philip Donovan. March 3rd, 1974. We're not leaving anybody at 12, are we? No, we're in good shape. On March 3rd, 1974, Mr. Theodore Donovan, age 50, made a note on the kitchen calendar. His daughter Patty's car had just gotten a flat tire on a trip to the drugstore. Pouring himself another Sunday morning cup of coffee, Ted Donovan could hardly have imagined that this seemingly ordinary event, the note, on the kitchen calendar, was the beginning of an all-out siege by violent, inhuman spirits that would begin with acts of vandalism and end in the near total destruction of his small ranch house. Hell would break loose in the Donovan household. Because the night before, 19-year-old Patty Donovan had crossed the line. She invited a demonic spirit to manifest. Though the deceived girl gave this permission unwittingly, she nevertheless committed a supernatural transgression of the highest order. What resulted was perhaps the worst case of diabolical attack the Warrens have ever experienced. Shall I continue? The actual beginning of the case would have to be dated a year earlier, though, Ed states. That's when Patty began using the Ouija board. In this day and age, her motive for seeking spirit communication was somewhat understandable. Bored and lonely, she was seeking excitement. This is a Catholic. Her family was strict and religious, kept a tight rein both on her and her 15-year-old brother Brian. A brooding adolescent, Patty had few friends and withdrew into herself. One night, in futility, she decided to try to find a friend on the Ouija board. After everyone had gone to bed, she placed the magic talking board on the floor, put her fingers on the planchette, and began asking questions. Is anyone there? My name is Patty Ann Donovan. Is there a spirit who can hear me? Suddenly the planchette whizzed up to yes. To Patty's eventual misfortune, she now had a disembodied acquaintance. From then on, Patty contacted the same spirit every night. She looked forward to the nightly communication with her patronizing, ethereal friend and would spend hours conversing on the board with her. Over the course of many months, the entity led Patty to believe back. Avoiding the passageway, Ed flung open the side door to the office and ran up the back steps of the house. You want me to quit?
No.
He would be too late. Upstairs, Lauren and Lorraine Warren sat in bed reading. You heard me read it earlier. A dreadful pall swept over the room as she sat quietly reading. Then setting the book down, she too realized that something was wrong. Very wrong. Now, the point I want to make, like parapsychology reports, there are too many of them to discount them all. Just because you don't understand it and because outside the normal. Bermuda Triangle, too many of them to discount them. I got three going here now. West Point, the Donovans, and Ed and Warren. Boy, we're having time with the cooler tonight. Either burn up or freeze. Too hot now. Wonder if we're having a visitation. Then, setting the book down, she too realized that something was wrong. Very wrong. I was terror-stricken, Lorraine recalls. But I didn't know what I was afraid of. I looked around the room, but nothing was there. I then looked down at our two dogs, asleep beside the bed. They were absolutely motionless, except the hair on each dog from head to tail was standing straight up in the air. Then, out of nowhere, I don't believe you're interested in this. Some of you have an evil look out of your eyes. I want to know if anybody out there in Georgia or Texas wants me to continue.